kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. We have another reviews episode lined up for you, and we've got some big games to talk about. First up, we are starting off with Tim Ekibis. Tim, how are you doing?
Good. Great. Wonderful. Man, it's been, I've been busy.
Have you?
It's been a couple weeks since I've been on, because I've had a big game on my hands here.
You have.
Yeah.
This is such a big game that you actually bought a console for this game.
Like a fucking idiot. Yeah, no, back in February, I was just kind of looking over a release list as we're trying to figure out, review codes to try to request and lining things up. And I was like, oh, man, like Activision usually gives us stuff. Can you think we might get in a code for Sekiro? Because I'm a huge Souls fan, and I was like, and then the question came up, was like, well, what if we get an Xbox One code? Because I don't have an Xbox One, and then I start doing bad convincing myself math. I'm like, well, if I don't, if we get a review code, then I don't have to go out and buy the games. So that's like $60 off right there, and I have, and then one thing led to another, and now I have an Xbox One X in my house.
How are you enjoying it?
Well, I played two games on it, which you'll hear all about here tonight. but I made an avatar. I still need to set up my account so I can claim my free games with gold. I plan on enjoying Game Pass in the near future. But my big goal for the Xbox One is to not buy any games for it, really. It's just to really enjoy the Game Pass. I'll have it available for reviews now, which is cool. But that's about it.
Game Pass is a good way to go, though. We always talk about how good Game Pass is on the show, and for $10 a month, I mean, come on.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like, I haven't played, even though most of the first party stuff on Xbox is also available on PC. I haven't bought or played any of it. Just as it happens. So yeah, as soon as I have Sekiro out of my system, I will be getting Game Pass and diving into Gears and a bunch of other fun stuff that's on there.
Forza Horizon 4. There's a good
one. I'll probably check that out. We'll see. I might have played Forza Motorsport back on Xbox 360 like a long time ago.
Horizon is a lot different than Motorsport.
Haven't really kept up. Yeah, I've heard that. Yeah, I've heard it looks good, so at least install it just to see how good it looks, and we'll see.
Install it and play it. It's on there with Game Pass, so you might as well, right?
Yeah, exactly. Not the top of my list, but I'm interested for sure.
It's on there. It's on there somewhere. It's always got to be on there, because it's fucking Forza, and it's amazing.
Yep.
So what else have you been up to?
Man, really, it's been playing Sekiro like every night. I post my weekly what I've been playing on my Twitter every week, just kind of for my own thought process. And it was like the week before, it was like, oh, I'm playing a little bit of this, a little bit of that, playing through Resident Evil 2 still. And then like last week was like Sekiro,
and that's it.
That was, of course, I got in some Overwatch and some Hearthstone and some Switch games that I play while I'm at work. But on my break, not while I'm on the clock, but other than that, it's been Sekiro whenever I can get a chance to put some time into this game.
So should we just dive into the review? It feels like you're itching to talk about it.
I am itching to talk about it.
All right. Well, then our first review tonight is Sekiro Shadows Die Twice, developed by From Software, published by Activision, released March 22nd on Xbox One, PS4, and PC for $59.99. You are the one-armed wolf, a disgraced and disfigured warrior rescued from the brink of death. Bound to protect a young lord who is the descendant of an ancient bloodline, you become the target of many vicious enemies, including the dangerous Ashina clan. When the young lord is captured, nothing will stop you on a perilous quest to regain your honor, not even death itself. Tim, tell us about this one.
That game sucks. Next! No, okay. All right, yeah. So
all right, your verdict.
I've jumped. I've been on the From bandwagon for a long time. I picked up Demon Souls kind of on a whim back when that first came out 10 years ago, almost now.
My back hurts.
And immediately I got it and quickly fell in love with the series, and I've played all of your Dark Souls. I bought a PS4. Speaking of buying consoles to play these games, I bought a PS4. Pretty much to play Bloodborne. Obviously I played other things on the console since then, but it was like, it was right when my, like my kid was coming. So I like couldn't be frivolous with my money. And like, I waited like a whole year. And I was like, we're financially stable enough. I'm buying a PlayStation 4. Bloodborne now.
This is From Software dictates what platforms you own.
They do, even though in this case I could have just got it on PC or whatever. But it was a nice incentive. Anyways, let's talk about Sekiro here. This game is fucking hard. man, I know, surprise, right? One of From Software's something Shocking. In the Souls series is hard. But even going into this game as a veteran, kind of the thing that I always said to people is that the hardest game in the series is the first one you play, because you have to learn everything. There's a lot of common language between the Souls games and Bloodborne. So once you kind of cut your teeth on the first one, the other ones get progressively a little bit, quote unquote, easier, just because you know how to deal with them. In this case, they're like, fuck you. everybody, fuck you. I know a lot. quite a few Soulsborne veterans who started up this game and hated it right off the bat. And kind of the big thing that I'll dive into, what I feel like defines this game, is its combat. It's really, I think, more combat focused than any of the other games. The other games, you know, they have combat, but you could kind of get away with just like, you dodge and then you'd probably hit R1 to attack. You just dodge enemies' attacks. You take advantage of your iframes. You just dodge out of the way, hit. That will get you very far in all of the games up to this point. Just a matter of kind of learning the timing and the enemies and all that stuff. In this game, you cannot get away with that shit, and this game will fuck you up in the early hours over and over and over again for thinking that you're going to dodge out of the way and just hit them back, because enemies track you way better, and they defend way better, and it's just not going to cut it. What ends up happening is you have to... It's a lot more like one-on-one swordplay, like almost like a fighting game is how it goes down. Or if you like really want to make your back hurt, think of like Bushido Blade. This kind of like tense, not quite that much, but it's like you are carefully attacking and especially deflecting enemy attacks. And as you attack and deflect and defend or you know, just block on your own, you and your opponent along with your life have a posture meter. And this is very key, because if you break an enemy's posture, you can land a death blow on them, which generally speaking kills them instantly. So you know, you get these super satisfying moments, like when you get that timing down and an enemy swings at you and you deflect perfectly and just, it opens them right up and you stab them and they're down. So it can be very like quick, satisfying, clean, just boom, block in, or it'll be like one block, you attack, they defend, then they come with their follow-up strike and then you defend that, boom, in there, done.
That sounds incredibly satisfying.
It is incredibly satisfying, but it takes a lot of practice. It can be really frustrating in the opening hours, I think, just for people coming into the game new, and for Souls players that are used to a different feel, a more methodical feel to the combat. It's just like you have to stand in there and work. Me and a few of my friends that we come together and form a little chat for when Souls games come around, and just talking about it. Like, we all have the same problem of like trying to dodge too much instead of standing and defending. But that is the basic essence, and that is kind of what the game rides on, is teaching you in the opening hours. You know, enemies have different weapon types, different, you know, swing patterns. There are these lethal attacks, more lethal, dangerous. There's a word for it. I can't remember. Perilous. I think it's perilous, where a red kanji symbol will appear, which I can't read because I'm not Japanese. And they will then either like thrust at you, they will do a sweep attack, or they will grab. And obviously you have to react differently for each of those. You have to get out of range of the grab. Sweeps are best defended if you jump straight up over them, because then you can land a kick on their head as the sweep goes under you, which does a ton of posture damage. And they thrust, you can deflect it, but there is an ability you get pretty early on where the actual smart thing to do is you dodge into it. You dodge into the thrust because you will step on the blade and stomp it into the ground, which then does a bunch of posture damage and opens the enemy up.
That's awesome.
It is awesome. And keep in mind, like, all this stuff, like, it comes with practice. They do, I think, a good job in the opening hours of, like, pacing this stuff out for you, where it's like, okay, here's, you know, an enemy that does this, and you're just kind of getting used to deflecting and the sword swings, and like, okay, well, this enemy has a torch, so you might have to dodge the fire a bit more. Here's an enemy. Some enemies have projectiles, another thing to deal with, but, you know, it's like, okay, here's a spear guy. He's a pain in the ass. He's here to teach you that you have to, how to deal with thrusts. Each enemy is kind of teaching you a different lesson, whereas, like, by the time you get, I don't know, maybe it's about a quarter of the way into the game, there's this, this samurai on horseback you fight in a field, and it's all about, like, beating him is really just all about landing your deflections on these big sweeping attacks. So if you can beat that guy, you have to have your deflections down to beat that guy, and once you have your deflections down enough to beat that guy, you're ready to kind of really tackle the rest of the game, because that's where things really start to blossom and open up from there. Not that it's, like, too confined early on. It's actually pretty nice. Pretty early on, you open up a second area, and you can bounce back and forth between them. Like, if you get stuck on one, you can bounce back to the other. If you get, I don't know, bored of one, you can just go and check out the other. So, which is something that is good in all these Souls Bloodborne games. Just, like, if you get stuck against an enemy, it's nice to have something else, someplace else to go and explore. Yeah. Which this game does have most of the time. And at a certain point, like, once you get to the castle, which is kind of the first major goal, like, there's a ton of different areas you can go to and explore all at once, and it is great. You get around, speaking of old games, this game kind of calls back to a little bit of Tenchu. Remember Tenchu?
Oh, man,
yeah. My back. Because unlike other Souls games, or really a lot of other just straight up action RPGs, there is a ton of movement and verticality to this game. You get a like a grappling hook early on, which you can use to grapple up to rooftops and, like, over chasms and tree branches and stuff like that. There is stealth mechanics in this game, where you can sneak around, you can hide in tall grass, you know, use, like, flatten yourself up against walls to see around them. Because, hey, guess what? If you sneak up on a guy, or if you're above them and you dive down on top of them, you get an instant kill, an instant death blow on them. So sometimes going into an area, like, you just kind of map that game or map that area out, how you're going to stealth your way through it. Like, okay, this guy's patrolling over here. This enemy is up here. I need to find my way around to this guy back here because he has a frying pan and he's going to set off an alarm if he sees me. So I need to go up here, start from the back, and just, like, okay, I stab this guy. Then I sneak through the house and I stab this guy. But then I go back here, stab him. Then I go back the other way, stab this one over there. And then there, yeah.
Damn.
You can mow areas of enemies down, like, once you get the gist of kind of without being seen, once you kind of get the gist of, like, where they're going, their patrols are, and how to work through it. But, you know, which is generally advisable, that you kind of stealth your way into any situation to try to pare enemy numbers down, because once you're trying to duel more than, like, two enemies at a time, things get really hairy. But one of the fun things that I really appreciate about this game is there is mid-bosses all over the place, which can usually be distinguished because they have these two dots over their over their health bar. Much like you, Sekiro have two dots over your health bar. and for you, this is the mechanic that allows you, when you die, you get an instant chance of coming back to life. So that hence the shadows die twice bit. So, yeah, you can revive after kind of like one major F up, which is important because with how tight the combat is with this deflecting, and like if you miss a couple deflects, like you're dead instantly. So you need that second chance. But for bosses, if you can sneak up on them, a lot of them, most of them that I've found, and you can get a death blow backstab on them and take off basically half their life right out of the gate. And it's great.
Damn.
I highly encourage finding ways to do that. And they allow you in many, many cases, there's only a handful. Usually it's like the major main bosses that you have no choice but to fight straightforward. But pretty much all the other ones, there is a way that you can sneak around, sneak away, kind of draw them out and stab them in the back to make that fight a lot easier. But I think it's awesome. They have that that freedom and ability there.
Sounds like a very open-ended game.
It is. It's a lot of fun, and there's like a lot of room for creativity. And beyond all that, there's while it doesn't have kind of the intricate statistical like equipment, it doesn't have equipment. You're not like equipping armor or different weapons or anything like that, like any of the other Souls games. You're not really like customizing your stats and like min-maxing like the other Souls games. Things are a lot more streamlined. Like, after you get four of these prayer bead items, you create a prayer necklace, and that gives you like a general stat boost. When you beat certain like main bosses, you get a memento of their memory, and when you look back on the memory, that strengthens your attack power. So it's very like here and there, like, okay, then you get a boost to your stats. But along the way, you are collecting experience. And when you collect experience, you know, a certain amount of experience, you get a skill point. So there's a skill tree. Sorry, there is multiple skill trees that unlock with active, you know, there's like a combat skill, like I can use this ability in combat. Like you can equip one combat ability that activates when you hit two of the buttons. So there's a variety of those. There's just like these latent abilities. So it's like, okay, I got the skill that now lets me like deflect projectiles when I'm jumping. Okay, sure. There's like passive stuff, just like my healing is better or my sneaky is better or whatever. And you unlock more trees as you go through the game. And you also have money. You get tons of money to buy items and stuff like that. One of the big things you get is, so you get your arm cut off. We mentioned he's a one-arm shinobi. Get your arm cut off, but it gets replaced with a prosthetic, which then you find tools for. So this ranges from like, okay, there's throwing stars. There is a like flame burst attack. There is, let's see, what's the other one? Fireworks. Firecrackers, that's what I use, because that's like a stun against enemies that I really like to use. There's an umbrella, a metal umbrella, which is a good, it's defensive. It helps you with your deflections. So there was like one particular boss who has a very, very fast attack. And in order to help me hit that window, I just use the umbrella.
that works.
To help me deflect it. You do your sub-weapon item usage is based on like how much of this thing called spirit emblems you can carry. It's kind of like, I don't know, you get them all the time. I never really ran out of them, but you can only carry so many at a time. So you can't just like spam abilities all willy-nilly. But yeah, anyways, all those tools also have upgrade trees for getting better and different versions of those tools. So there is lots of different ways to upgrade your character. It's not quite as straightforward as like, oh, I'm going to boost my health or my attack or whatever, or I'm going to enhance this weapon that I got. This is my weapon. I'm going to make this weapon stronger. I'm going to forge it stronger. It's not so much like that. It's more of like giving you more options to deal with different situations, which is cool, because sometimes I'll go into a boss and like, I'll just be getting whomped and I'll be like, okay, how do I need to approach this differently? Do I need to use like a buff item? Do I need to change what tools I'm using? Is there a different way I can approach their location so that I can get in and get that death blow, early death blow on them? Yeah, it's great. It's a lot of fun. But of course, there is some penalty for dying in this game, but I don't find it to be too harsh. If you die, you lose half your money that you're carrying and half your skill points to your next skill level. Or wait, sorry. You lose half your experience to your next skill point. So let's say you already have two skill points banked. whatever experience you've gained between skill point 2 and 3, that gets halved, but it won't take a point away from you. The lowest it'll go is just back to like 0 to the next level. So it's not that bad. Good. Yeah. It doesn't have blood stains. Like traditionally these games had a blood stain where I was just like, okay, you run back and get your corpse and then you get your stuff back. What you do get is a percent chance of just not losing your stuff, which is like, okay, it's fine. I never find the penalty for dying in these games to be too horrible, because when it comes down to it, what actually matters is you learning the enemy patterns and movements more so than your actual like statistics and abilities. But it is nice sometimes just like, oh, I didn't lose my shit. And really it's just kind of important along the way to remember to spend your stuff, or to maybe play it a little safer when you have, if you're really close to another level, maybe you shouldn't say, oh, there's that giant snake. Well, maybe I should. Just as I was, funny story, just as I was crossing this long wooden rope bridge and noticing like, oh, well, there's that giant snake again. I wonder if I should turn around and go get this last bit of experience in the next level. Giant snake turned his head around and broke the bridge. And there was a lot of panic in the next few moments of my game trying to stay alive under what was going on. Spoiler, there's a giant snake. But yeah, one thing though, if you die a bunch of times in a row, your chance to receive that aid will go down, and NPCs in the area will start to get this thing called dragon rot, where they start to get sick, and I don't know how bad it can get. I imagine they can die from it. Some of my NPCs have died, but after I cured it, because you can cure it, of course, like they don't just stick you with it the whole game, but that is a mechanic that I'm not sure all the ins and outs of yet. Just because sometimes it takes a couple playthroughs to understand all the mechanics in these games.
Yeah.
But it's very different. I can see the shared DNA between this and the previous games from in this lineage, but there's definitely a lot of new stuff going on just with the combat and the movement. Like there's no stamina in the game, so you can just run. So I already know there's speedruns out there of this game that are under an hour, and it makes total sense, because you can just run. There's no stamina to keep you from running, and all you really need, like once you have the timing of those deflections and parries down on the main bosses that are in your way, I'm sure you can just blaze through it. From a technical perspective, I think it looks pretty great on an Xbox One. I know I did watch like a Digital Foundry video before it came out that the frame rate is not a smooth 60. If you want the absolute best version of this game, you should be looking at the PC version.
Obviously.
Obviously. I've heard that there's performance issues kind of more with the frame rate when you're looking at like the PS4 or like base Xbox versions. But I mean, my friends are playing on the PS4 version. They seem to be having a fine time with it. So it's not really, they're not complaining about it at all. So yeah, Sekiro.
Yeah. Ooh. Aside from that, any other negatives? Cause it sounds like it's just nothing but praise.
No, I don't really. Once I got into it, it's a really great, refreshing. I mean, you know, you're taking it from someone who is already a sucker for these games, but I feel it's like right up there with kind of the best in the series so far.
I'm surprised you didn't bring up the one of the early bosses that is nothing but wrestling moves.
Oh, the ogre?
The ogre, yeah.
Yeah, man, he power bombs you and then he throws you back over his head. His grab is bullshit, I will add, too. He does this diving grab, and the fucking hitbox on it is total bullshit. Like, it will suck you in. It is disgusting. I don't like it. Felt great when I got past him. Getting past him is a very key point in the game, because you start to get a lot of stuff, like, right after that, and things start to open up.
Yeah, the first time I saw that guy, I immediately thought of you, because he's doing, like, elbow drops and drop kicks. Oh,
yeah, he does elbow drops, drop kicks. Yeah, he does. It was a long time ago. I thought
of you.
Yeah.
All right, well, overall, $60. What do you think of it?
Yeah, I think it is absolutely a buy. Some people are just going to be warded off by the difficulty of these games, but I feel like, and it's tough, like, I can't even say, like, oh, go rent it and give it a try, because in the span of a rental, you might not really acclimate to the combat, like, all the way, and you're like, well, I shouldn't have to play like X amount of hours of a game to like really like it. And no, like, no, you shouldn't. But like, I feel it just has so much to offer, and it's so fun. And like, once the game really opens up and you get the hang of the combat, like it's so rewarding and so fun to play and explore. And it's just such a great time. And obviously, like, it's a great dollar to hour value proposition. It's plenty long. and I'm like excited to jump into either a new game plus run or just like a new game just to like see how fast I can go through the early areas of the game now that I have a much better hang of the combat. It's a great game. It's front runner for early front runner for game of the year for me.
Wow.
Right now. Yeah. I mean, it's March. Well, it's April now, but yeah, it's fantastic.
Awesome. That is good to hear.
Yeah, it's very good.
All right, you got one other game to talk about. That is called Anger Force Reloaded, developed by Screambox Network, published by eHome Entertainment, released April 2nd on Xbox One for $9.99. Anger Force Reloaded is an action-packed, vertically scrolling shoot-em-up game that pays homage to the classics of 90s arcades. This high-octane experience is set against the backdrop of a 19th-century human world that has seen the outbreak of a robot rebellion. Tim, tell us about it.
All right, yeah, this game is a bit more straightforward than Sekiro, though they both involve anger. this is a pretty cool. Yeah, like you said, it's a top-down shooter. The game it takes place. You know, it's kind of like the middle third-ish of your screen is your actual play field with like your kind of score off to one side and your stats and ability stuff off to the other. It didn't seem like there was when I was digging through the menus, like this is a port of a PC game, I believe. It didn't seem to have an option for like Tate mode or for turning it vertically, for what it's worth, out that I think many people turn their TVs vertically, but, just thought I'd say something. I don't think it's that hard to keep. I think the graphics are crisp and bold enough that like even playing from my couch, I felt like I could see, you know, distinguish the bullets in my ship in the background and all that stuff well enough as it was. I will say for a port, it does seem like it is not optimized like perfectly for the console. I'm hoping there might be like a day one patch or something that'll smooth some of that out, just because like some of the menuing was like a little bit stiff, or it might freeze up for a second, or when it's loading, there was like a little bit of a hitchiness to it that I, you know, didn't feel smooth. It's not a big deal. It was out of gameplay stuff, but I was just kind of like, wish that was like a little bit better, you know? Yeah. But as far as the gameplay goes, it's a top-down shooter. You have four different characters to pick from. They have different bullet patterns, which is to be expected. And bombs, of course, bombs, you need bombs. There's seven levels, you know, multiple difficulties. There is a story mode. There is an arcade mode. There's co-op mode. Arcade mode is purely like kind of score attack stuff. Story mode is really kind of what I'm going to focus on the most here, because that kind of has some of the most interesting. The most interesting thing, what makes this game interesting, is in the story mode. So along with kind of their base, like regular, like shot and bomb abilities, each ship has two different special abilities. So for example, there is a like the robot character, which my son insisted that I play a bunch of the time. Robot has like slightly higher health. He has one attack, which shoots out like a little stationary drone, which shoots a laser straight vertical on the screen for like a few seconds. Or he shoots out this like chain energy ball, which will like, you know, go through a bunch of enemies and do a bunch of damage. And each ability uses a certain amount of like skill charge or something like that. I don't know what they call it. But either way, like you can recharge kind of like how much energy you have through pickups from enemies, or if you hold B, you will just self-charge it. Usually that's not something you can do when you're just playing through a level, but on bosses, when you want to recharge your special abilities and you're kind of concentrating more on just like dodging through their bullets, like that is an option there. Or like in the moment before the boss appears, you can refill it real quick. But either way, that is a cool system. It's not something where like kind of most shooter games, like you pick up your power-ups, you shoot enemies, you pick up the power-ups as you go, right? Yeah. And you'll pick up different like missile attachments, whatever. Here your character has your abilities, and it's more about managing when you use them, when you charge them, like when power-ups are coming, so you don't have to rely on recharging them. It's cool. You know, different characters have different abilities. Like there's this little monk character who has like a little leaf shield, but he'll also like summon a god, a deity who like shoots wind and does damage for like that. You know, there's a girl with a shotgun, and her other ability is evading me. I think it's a slow moving time bomb thing, which does a ton of damage, but it moves out really slowly. So it's cool. Like there is good reason to want to bounce between the characters and check out their different abilities and try different play styles. But what kind of really puts this game over for me over like other bog standard shooters, which I've reviewed a few for this podcast. And a lot of the time I'm just kind of like, you know, it's another shooter, buy it or don't, you know what you're getting. like this. So when you get to the, you get to the end of a level and you can, you pick up like these, I'll say just currency. I don't know what they're called. You can spend some currency just to like restore health or bombs or energy for that particular playthrough. It's usually a small amount for each thing. It's like one here, two here, five there. But when you get to the end of like a campaign run and you die, you can spend 15 currency to just keep going. Or when you die, it pulls up the skill tree. Aha! Ho-ho! Upgrades! Mm. So you can then spend all that currency to upgrade your fighters. So there's like a bunch of general upgrades that just relate to like shot power, energy, how many bombs can carry, etc. And then each character has like three upgrades that pertain to their personal skills. So, and all this carries over like as you keep playing the game. So even though you're dying and you're certainly not making it to the end of level 7 on your first playthrough, I wouldn't think, you can keep upgrading your characters, upgrading your abilities. You can start like really focusing in on your favorite character once you pick a favorite and your favorite abilities and start powering up and making it further and further and further as you go. So it's more than just like rote memorization of patterns and stuff like that. Like you can gradually make your fleet stronger and make more and more progress into the game. And I think that's really cool and makes it more worth checking out than some of the other shooters. Graphics look good, like nice crisp sprites, like well animated, like everything like looks good and is easy to see. The music is kind of butt, which I mean that in a nice way. Like it's like, you know, like a guitar rock soundtrack, but like some of the songs are just kind of like, I don't know. They're just like, they're not bad, but sometimes they grate a little, which I don't know whether it's just kind of like some of the sound, the quality of the recording or whatever. Like, I don't mean to say that's bad, but I don't know. Somehow, but just like is the word that comes to mind. Just kind of like this like gritty
just
sound.
Butt rock.
Something like that. Yeah. It's like a freaking generic wrestler's entrance theme on NXT. But yeah. Yeah. Whew.
I love your NXT reference.
It's like before they get a real song from CFO or whatever.
Oh, man.
Push. Yeah.
That hits home for me. That one hits home.
You know exactly what I mean.
Yes. Yes, I do. Like John Cena's first theme.
Oh, God. Like before the Doctor of Thugonomics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just that generic butt rock song he had.
Sure. Yeah.
Oh man, so Anger Force Reloaded, $10. What do you think of it?
Yeah, that's a buy. I think it's you know, it encourages you to keep playing, get better, get those upgrades, and keep grinding away to get a little bit further every time. And it's a lot of fun. It's a cool game. I liked it.
Awesome. Sounds good. Oh, Tim, always a pleasure having you on. I know you're going to be on the next episode as well for our Wrestlecast.
Yeah, like wrestling.
You excited for that?
I am, sort of. As just excited as I am for, you know, 20 hours of wrestling this weekend.
It's going to be hell.
Delicious.
But yeah, thanks as always for coming on, doing your thing. Do you have any final words before we move on?
Yeah, I'll just say that, you know, for last note for Souls fans and what I kind of feel like about that series as a whole is, you know, people can sometimes be a little dismissive of fans of the series. They're just like, you're a bunch of masochists. and you just like dying and all that stuff. It's like, no, it's not about the dying. It's about the triumph of victory. And, you know, especially like playing those games, beating a hard boss, like overcoming large odds and that, like that high you get after you do that. So it's like, it's almost like a drug, that like me and other people that are in these games, like we're chasing our next high, which is why, you know, we, any game that's kind of souls, like, you know, we're bouncing into like Salt and Sanctuary. Just like, man, will this shit get me high? Will it get me high? And I'm like, eh, it didn't really get me that high. But, Sekiro will get you fucked up, son.
All right, moving on. We've got our good friend Pernell Vaughn joining. Pernell, how are you doing?
Doing all right today. It's getting this winter. We got our bit of an April Fool's winter's just screwing around with this bit going on. But otherwise, I'm okay. How are you?
I'm doing good. It was in the like the 40s and 50s this weekend, so it wasn't that bad.
I don't know, man. I feel it was definitely 30s today. And was it? I didn't like it. Oh, yeah. And I tried to go to the gym with my 30s, my clothes on. And quite frankly, I wasn't having it. Though, of course, as it goes, when you're done at the gym and you walk out, all of a sudden it feels so hot outside. It feels amazing all of a sudden. So you're like, not, it's not so bothersome. But going in there with shorts, it still felt like it may as well have been winter. But I think next week is when we're going to see a bit of an up clip. And that should be nice. Though, there's another topic that's actually game related that's been bugging me lately.
Let's hear it. What's on your mind?
Game difficulty. This is a topic that comes up whenever From Software releases a new game. It happens all the time. And I don't get it.
It came up about 20 minutes ago.
Are you serious?
Yeah, Tim was talking about it on his review of Sekiro.
I'm worried if I'm going to touch on the same stuff he said, though.
You might, but who cares? You're you and he's him, so live your own life, man. You be you.
Be myself. but people are, you know, of all places, Forbes freaking magazine has had articles written about this where they're like, the game needs to be easier. It needs to be an easy mode slapped into the game. And people, of course, are coming into the threads going, I like to play games to relax after a hard day of work. I don't want to have to sit home and struggle with my game because I already struggle to get up the corporate ladder in the real world. And my thoughts are, if you really feel that way, there are thousands of other games waiting for you to pop in and just kind of run through with little difficulty and then play something else. Because the majority of games that I come across are designed exactly that way. They may have a hard mode, but it's usually just they make the enemies harder to kill through the hit point sponges, or they make you easier to kill because you become a glass cannon. Mm-hmm. And that's generally it. Like, difficulty sliders usually involve tweaking numbers and stats. That's it. But I feel like there's something to be said about when a game is designed around a very specific skill set or difficulty level, because it allows the developer to put everything they've got into the design of that world, whether it be the way the map is designed or the way the enemies behave when they're approached by the player or interact with the player. Just a number of things that I feel as though if a developer were to say, hey, we need to design this game to be easy and hard, all of a sudden now you're dividing your attention between two different styles of gameplay for one cohesive world. And I generally feel like if you're going down that road, something's likely going to suffer, whether it's the easy half, the hard half, or both in some way. I'm not saying it's impossible to do it. I'm not saying that it's not, you know, that it should never be attempted. But I am saying that if your concern is that the game where I want to explore this game world, but it's too hard to progress through it, it's going to sound harsh, but maybe it's just not for you then. If you don't want to put that effort in to try to do it, just play something else, which that would also have a great world inside, you know, attributed to it. And I actually want to ask your opinion on this next statement, because a friend of mine brought it to me right before we started recording tonight. He said, well, my reason for wanting to explore the game is I would like to see the world itself instead of playing something else. I'm generally not very good at video games, though, so I feel like I'm being cheated out of the ability to see more of the game. And he said, there's a reason why games like The Surge, or he named like another like semi quote unquote throwawayable game worlds are not really appealing and don't get talked about outside of their game experiences because they're not great. And my response to that was, a lot of people might also say the reason why the Dark Souls and, you know, those challenging game worlds do get talked about is because people have to break their balls to see them. Like,
yeah,
when you have to work to earn something in a game, you're going to talk about it. Man, when I beat that dude and walked through that hallway and the sky opened up and all of a sudden I was in this golden city, that was amazing. Versus, I leveled up and just grinded past this level and then got another item that lets me shoot fire. And I killed a bunch of dudes. You know, and I think that is a huge difference in how you hear people discuss different kinds of games. Like, it's very rare to hear people discuss a Dark Souls game. Like, I just kind of killed a bunch of guys and ran through, beat a few bosses, you know, leveled up a bit, got to the end. Yeah, it was a good game. Kind of play something different. They usually go into the specifics. Like, man, this specific monster gave me tons of trouble. This boss, I had to come up with a strategy for him. Here's what I had to do. And you're talking back and forth. You're exploring. You're talking about the way you experienced the game. It's not a throwaway experience. And it's because you worked for it. And yeah, it's easier for some people than others. But so what? That just means they're just the cream of the crop in gameplay skill, I guess. Whatever. But what is your take on that statement?
I can see both sides of the coin on this one. Like, I can appreciate games that make you work for what you do in the game and actually make you earn progress and earn getting to new areas. And it gives you a sense of pride and accomplishment for getting past, you know, a particularly difficult boss or a challenging puzzle. But on the flip side, I'm creeping up on 40 and I don't have the time I used to have to play games, especially with how much we get for this show that I have to spread my time amongst. So I can understand the desire for an easier game that you can just blaze through, see everything, appreciate everything, and move on.
Oh, and I think I actually agree with you on that statement too. But there's something that goes into it. Like, it's like a it's a straight statement actually. We're getting older, which is why, like you said, sometimes time isn't there to, you know, hone your skills and beat through stages and get to the end, right?
Yeah.
But every gamer is not us, and there's still that younger contingent that has the time and energy that we used to have that should also still have access to the experience that we used to enjoy and embrace if we had the time to do it. So it might suck that we might go, crap, man, I've been playing it, and this actually is me, for that matter. Oh, man, I've been playing Enter the Gungeon since it came out. How far have you gotten? I never got past the fourth floor. That sucks, you know? But at the same time, I have a friend who beat the entire game and got the true ending for one of the characters. Something Damn. That I've never met another person pulled it off. Never. But this guy did it because he took the time to do it. He played that one game along with like Street Fighter and DDR, and he was able to pull it off. And he's around my age. So Damn. To me, it's like him being able to experience that is awesome. That's something that he was able to do. And it's something that I have not done. Maybe I will someday because I do still play Gungeon, but even if I don't, I'm okay with that. I played as best I could, got as far as I got, and enjoyed what I was able to pull off within the game's environment. And then I'll just go play other stuff, too. Like, I bought Yoshi's Crafted World, or whatever the heck that's called. That game is a sleeper. You can just fall asleep and beat that game. And yet, it's still enjoyable, and I'm still going to enjoy it. It's just, I'm not there for the challenge. I'm there for the experience. And that game was designed with that in mind, so I can do that.
Yeah.
And my friend's response to that was like, wouldn't you like to see Yoshi be more challenged? Like, yeah, I would, but that's not what the designer's intent was. I'm not going to say, hey, Nintendo, make Yoshi difficult. Why? They don't have to. They know what they want. They know what they want the player to experience. They give it to them, and it's my choice whether or not I want to engage in that or not.
Yeah.
In this instance, I do, because it's Yoshi, and Yoshi makes me smile. So, hey, whatever the hell is sound that you like to make, but I don't know. It's an interesting argument, depending on how you slice it, but I always feel like it should just boil down to play something else if it's too much for you, because there's other options available. And there's so many game worlds that you're never going to experience everything that's available to you anyway.
Yeah. Right?
So just take your time and experience something else.
Yeah, you might as well. My cats are making some crazy noise in the background. I don't know if my microphone's picking it up or not, but I think it's potato.
I'm not hearing the cats, but I'm hoping that they're like, yeah, you tell the world, you tall male, you.
The cat's like, fuck yeah, Purnell. You tell them what's up.
Meow. Meow. That is one articulate cat.
Meow. Anyway, we should probably talk about the games that you're here to talk about, huh?
I suppose so. I wish Potato could talk about it.
Oh, God. Well, I'll do my best to be like Potato. So, meow, 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 for meow, 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 meow.
I see. I like this game.
I think this would be better in English.
Yeah, I guess so. Not everyone can speak cat.
Yeah. Anyway, so first game to talk about with you is called The Legend of Heroes, Trails of Cold Steel, developed by Nihon Falcom, published by Exceed and Marvelous, released March 26th on PS4 for $49.99. Thor's Military Academy, Erebonia's best learn everything from the art of war to liberal arts. First-year-ian Schwarzer, God, these names are amazing, learns he's been selected to join the controversial Class 7, and they'll need to deal with more than just class warfare. They'll need to safeguard their country from chaos. Pernell, tell us about this one.
Don't feel too bad, because I've been playing the game where they actually verbally say his name, and I still screw it up.
What is it?
It's Rain Schwarzer.
Rain, okay. I'm like, I want to call Rian, Rian, Rain.
Like, Rain. Like, your name is Rain, and that's it. No, my name is Rain Schwarzer. Screw you. I tell you what your name is. I'm the player character here. Wait a minute. Funny thing about this game, I actually originally bought it on the PS Vita when it first came out, along with the sequel. And as you know, I never played them because just never got around to it.
Oh, yeah, it's sitting on my shelf, too. Hi, Trails of Cold Steel. How are you?
I'm sitting here. Boot me up.
Turn your Vita on.
What are you doing? But I will say, due to getting the opportunity to review this, and I'm honestly kind of hoping that the sequel has a similar result, wink, wink, company, that I'm glad I was able to review this because it was the excuse I needed to just jump in line for everything else and finally give this game a try. And I have been very, very happy with it. Falcom, they have a gift when it comes to role-playing games, whether it's with the Ys series, which for people who may not know, Ys is like pretty much my favorite all-time game series, period. And then there's also Trails in the Sky, which is another Legend of Heroes side story series. In which case, funny enough, this game takes place in the same world that Trails in the Sky took place in. So if you're familiar with Trails in the Sky, well, you really should play this game now because you'll hear some names and see some faces that will clearly ring true to you as a, holy crap, I know that guy. What's he doing there? But as far as this game itself is concerned, it is interesting. You play as, again, Rain Schwarzer, and the game takes place over the course of about a year or so. Sort of like, I don't want to say like Persona, but I just did, so oops. but not the same in the fact that you're not really, like, you know, you're not following the same model of gameplay. Instead, with this game, it is story first, experience also first, but mostly based around the story, because the calendar is moves depending on how, when you complete various game missions. So, for example, you might come into the school on like March 20th or something. I just made that up, but you might join the school on March 20th and you'll experience the day in the story there. Like, you might say, okay, I can walk around the campus and meet all the classmates. And there's a ton of characters in this game. They all have names and their own little dialogue. It's actually kind of nice. Oh, just side note, Falcom is really good at world creating and world building, so you're going to get that in this game in spades. But anyway, you walk around, you can talk to people, blah, 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 experience things. And when the day is over, you'll go to bed, the calendar will scroll forward whatever number of days it needs to get to the next eventful day in the calendar, and then it'll stop there, and you'll proceed to experience more story. You might have some missions that you have to undertake, which will allow you to explore the area that you're in and engage in those missions. Like, it might be something as simple as, I don't know, deliver these items to these various people around town, which is meant to be an excuse to get you exposed to the world and the people and the existence of the world itself. And then there'll be other missions like, okay, the townsfolk are being terrorized by this weird monster. Please go take care of it. So you might have to go take care of that. So you'll be doing things of that nature. But throughout all these experiences, you'll be getting to know your party members. You'll be getting to know the people in the town, the world that you're in. And gears will turn in the overall story as the characters, there's about 9 of them, are going through their time at Thor's Academy. and their experience in the world and what the actual purpose of quote unquote class 7 actually is. And it's a pretty big purpose, but that's what makes it kind of awesome, because it starts out rather, you know, slice of life, and it becomes, holy crap, really? And it's extremely engaging. Gameplay wise, like actual, like combat, I love it. I've actually been kind of wanting a traditional RPG style game, and I surprisingly have not engaged because I've been playing so many of the random things, and this bad boy is traditional RPG. Combat takes place on a grid, not a grid, but on like a field map, and every attack has like a, I don't want to say every attack, but you have a number of options. You can attack a person, which means as long as your guy can run up to them and reach them, they can land an attack, of which can be like a slash, a strike, a pierce style attack. You can use an art, arts being magic spells. I'll get to how you can get those spells in a bit, but for the most part, you cast a spell. And there are also crafts. Crafts are attacks that use a different gauge called CP, whereas the arts use EP gauges, and you can use those to do a specific type of attack too. EP is gained by using items or resting up. CP is gained by beating the tar out of monsters and just boosting it. Now, there's a actual like turn gauge on the left, like sort of like a time window, so you can see, okay, when I attack here, the enemy attacks next, then this guy, then this guy.
Yeah.
And you can see the order of turn for all the characters and monsters. Throughout that, there's also, say, like perks that might pop up, like in this specific spot on the time window, you'll get a CP boost, or you'll get guaranteed critical damage, or I don't know, an instant spell cast. You don't have to wait for the spell to go off, and the spell also will be free, which is kind of nice. You can actually try to plan and say, okay, I'm going to get a free spell use. That's going to be good. However, monsters can also take advantage of that. And if they're on that window, they could get the free spell cast or things of that nature. So what you end up trying to do sometimes, in addition to just fighting the battles, is you might find yourself trying to rearrange the turn order, whether it be by casting a spell that intentionally has a delay so that you can push the time window down so that then one of your party members can get a bonus instead of the enemy. Or there's also something called an S-break in this game. And what that is throughout the course of the game, the characters, through story elements or story moments, will learn these special attacks called S-breaks. And they use the CP gauge. And what happens is once you've got 100 CP, you can use this skill either on your turn, or you can interrupt any turn you want and just throw it out there and just wreck shop with it. It is a fantastic ability, and it's totally exploitable if you want. Though the downside is once if you die in combat, it gets the CP gauge gets drained down to zero, so it'll take a while to fill it back up. But it's worth definitely making use of that in order to exploit enemy skills and interrupt attacks and things of that nature. I mentioned earlier also how do you get arts and magic spells in the game, and that's done by something called the quartz system, but for some reason off the top of my head, I'm actually forgetting the name of the damn thing. But basically, there's these things called quartz, and you can slot them into a grid that's actually not very complicated at all. It's just a bunch of circles on a pad, and you can slap them in to this actual grid. And depending on what you slide in there, determines what skills you get. So there might be like one slot you put in like a fire crystal. The fire crystal will offer you a skill called like meltdown or heat wave. And then you can use that spell in combat. Or there's something called a master quartz, which everyone has one slot for us in the center of their, you know, their quartz grid, I'll call it. And when you equip that, that actual thing can level up as you fight battles. And that teaches you new skills or new art skills, in addition to giving you side perks like bonus money after you kill a guy, or increased attack power, or one free life resurrection, stuff like that. And it's honestly an addictive system. I like leveling up the master quartz. I like messing around with the slottings in the game. I like just playing the game. It's a very enjoyable experience. I am worried that I might have forgotten to mention something. Is there something that might come to mind to you that I didn't touch on?
Not really. You covered a lot.
Oh, awesome. I feel good now. So honestly, like I said, this game feels fantastic. The game progresses. I never really feel like I'm being rushed. If anything, the game takes a sweet time. But if you feel as though, you know, JRPG world exploration takes a sweet time and is way too long, I'm not sure if this is in the older versions, but this version of the game has something called a turbo mode, which I abuse the living daylights out of. You press one button and the game goes into super speed mode. Everything just goes faster. And what that means is saved time for you, the player. So you might be in a dungeon. You might want to take your time and walk around here, maybe press the run button to get to another place over here. But when you feel as though you see what you need to see, you just want to get from one end of the map to the other, hit that turbo mode button, and your character starts darting across the screen like it's nobody's business. Is a real time saver. And honestly, I wish every game company put a turbo mode in their RPGs, because seriously, there's a lot of downtime that comes in the games from just running from one place to another.
Oh yeah.
And this really does a great job of resolving that, or absolving you of that problem. So in the end, this game is a blast. Like I adore it. And I look forward to Trails of Cold Steel 2. I look forward to Trails of Cold Steel 3, because thankfully we're getting that. Everything that Falcom has done needs to come to the States. And I sing my praises of this game. The voice work is good. The gameplay is great. The story is nice. It respects my time as a player. It's just good. It's a great game.
So I kind of know what your answer is going to be, but $50 on it, what do you say?
I'd say deny it, because it's just not a very enjoyable product. It'd be nice if they actually put, you know, some effort into producing a quality thing. But what can I say? It's just not good. And I am lying, because April Fool's a day late, but...
days late by the time this is up.
Oh, touche. But definitely a buy it for this game. Worth every penny. This is the kind of RPG that I wish we got more often these days. It is worth your time and your cash.
It really, really, really makes me wish that games like this would come to Xbox.
Honestly, I don't see any reason. Well, I'm sure there's like political reasons, but as far as like access, I see no reason to give as many people access to a game as possible. It's just, is it possible? Like licensing or all that nonsense or whatever. But if it was on Xbox, I wager people would play it.
I would. That's for goddamn sure. I mean, a game just came out recently that released on Switch, PS4, and Windows 10. So it has Xbox achievements in it, but it's not available on Xbox One.
What game was that?
Inferno Climber.
Huh.
Which we will be talking about eventually on the show.
That is an odd thing, though. When it comes, it's one thing for everything else, but when it's like it's on Windows 10. That's when I'm kind of confused. Like, it's
they already went through the hoops of adding Xbox support to the game and adding achievements. Just put the fucking thing on Xbox.
So I'm telling you, sometimes it makes you wish that somebody at someone would go rogue and like, okay, I'm about to lose my job. So guess what? Here's why games are doing what they do and not what you want them to do. And the guy has to come out and drag him by his ear and drag him off the stage or whatever. But before he leaves, he gives you the dirt, because I do genuinely wonder why that stuff doesn't happen. I'm merely glad that we get him on some game systems, though. Like, that's true. Why it's like, it almost feels like, well, even more than in the past, like it pays to be like a multi-console owner, but it would ultimately be nice for everybody to be able to play everything whenever they can, because, hey, we all want to play fun games, right?
Goddamn right. Speaking of fun games, you got one more to talk about. That is called Darksiders Warmastered Edition, developed by Kaiko, published by THQ Nordic, released April 2nd on the Switch for $29.99. Deceived by the forces of evil into prematurely bringing about the end of the world war, the first horseman of the apocalypse stands accused of breaking the sacred law by inciting a war between heaven and hell. In the slaughter that ensued, the demonic forces defeated the heavenly hosts and laid claim to Earth. Pernell, tell us about this one.
Well, first of all, you made quite the assumption that we're talking about another good game. I mean, is it good?
I enjoyed it on Xbox 360 and Xbox One with the Warmastered Edition, so I'm hoping that it holds up well on the Switch.
Oh, I can't lie. It is a freaking good game.
Okay.
Whew. Damn it! This game is terrible! What were they thinking?
Son of a bitch.
Fun fact about this is another game that I have actually owned and never played before. That most on the past, I helped my brother play through certain areas of the game when he was stuck on puzzles which is why at the time I had dubbed it as like a darker Zelda game. Having played it in full on this system, though, myself, I don't think I could truly call it a dark Zelda anymore. But no. That's a bad thing. Because Zelda is less free flow than Zelda is, I think. But it does share a lot of the adventure elements that Zelda has, which makes me really enjoy and appreciate this game because, quite frankly, it's a lot of fun to play. You play as War, as stated earlier by Joe, and you are pretty much traversing an apocalypse-ravaged Earth. It looks like shit, fellas. Real bad. But it's also kind of cool. I like the idea of like walking around some like these like battered cars that somehow survived a century of neglect, and just like old buildings and stuff. And as you're running around, you're ultimately trying to find a way to pretty much, at least to start the game off, defeat the Destroyer, who is the apocalyptic entity that is pretty much running things now on Apoco Earth. And as you're doing this, you are slowly also trying to regain your lost powers, because in order to pursue, you know, this monster to figure out why the heck you were summoned prematurely, as in the description of the game, you were also neutered of all your main skills and powers, because they had to make a four horseman weak somehow, right? So that you could actually have to build them up. But you're pretty much running around, you know, trying to get your powers back, also fighting crazy monsters and having Mark Hamill yell in your ear to do things, which I actually had to look that up because I could not believe that was Mark Hamill. But anyway, so gameplay is pretty straightforward. You have a melee weapon, which is your Chaos Bringer weapon, and that thing can wreck shop on monsters. It's probably your most powerful weapon that you ever get in the game. In addition to that, there are also some sub-weapons you come across in the game, which can be equipped and used with another button. So you can kind of seamlessly run from using your sword to transitioning into your scythe, for example, and just kind of juggle the two types of weapons on enemies and have a nice, fun day, you know, comboing monsters with your gear. Combat itself is not very complicated, but that's okay. It's more so meant to be fun and enjoyable and chaotic than, you know, complicated, remembering button combinations and mess that nobody's got time for. But as you kill enemies, you get actual souls, which can be then taken to a guy in the local that you pop into on different areas of the game, who will sell you various things, whether it be new sub weapons, healing items, or like, I guess I call them charms, basically, which you can attach to your different weapons, which will allow them to have various buffs and perks, like, you know, item weaponry, destructible objects giving you more goods, or boosting in your boost of wrath, which is your special attack gauge. You know, every time you fill up a wrath block, you can do one special move. And honestly, that doesn't fill up too often, so you're going to want that wrath booster as soon as you can get it. The voice work in this game is very good. The environments themselves are pretty nice, too. And being able to play this on the go made things way better for me. This became my lunch break game for the past couple of weeks, to be honest with you, nice. In addition to playing it at home. It's a quality product. I like that the world itself, again, is like an apocalyptic version of Earth. But when you talk to characters, like, you need to go to this location, it's always like these, like, these spirit world type names, like, go to the Broken Stair where you will find such and such. The Broken Stair is just a dilapidated tower. There's nothing special about it. It's just an old building that has been, you know, corrupted by the demonic forces. But what can I say? It's still an old freaking building. I enjoyed this game a lot. It is very action-packed. The only thing I wish is that there was like a full-on run button, because whereas in the last game I just talked about how awesome a turbo mode button was, in this game, when you're trying to like traverse large environments, the most you get is like a dash button, but it's sort of like a short burst dash, like whoosh. Dash ahead and stop. Yeah. So you have to keep kind of spamming that to move faster and faster. You said you played the old one, so you know what I'm talking about when I say that. But I do enjoy the fact that as you play the game also, while the world itself isn't like, say, as open as like a Zelda game, you do still get equipment upgrades from story moments, like beating bosses or from chess, that will allow you to explore and access new areas and old places. So you can actually acquire, you know, like health gauge boosters similar to heart containers or wrath extenders or armor pieces. And perhaps I said too much. Anyway, Point is, spoil. But you basically can explore the world with new gear, similar to how you would in an adventure game like Zelda. And it gives you the excuse to kind of go back and explore places you've already been. And honestly, it's just kind of cool to see war get stronger and stronger as you play through the game. Once you start getting combos where you're just kind of breaking faces open, it feels fantastic. Though, unfortunately, the side effect to that is they just keep hitting you with larger and larger monsters who you cannot stun lock, and you have to kind of like do like block counters and dodges and all that mess. So, whoosh. But I'm trying to think if there's anything I missed out on discussing in this game. Because honestly, I can't think of any negatives. Like, I've seen people joke around on like the Facebook page where they'll go, oh, if I wanted a downgrade for my game, I would just buy it on a Game Boy or something.
Oh, God.
It's such a dumb statement because, like I said, I've been playing it pretty much damn near exclusively on the handheld mode. Game looks great. It plays great. I don't feel as though this is a downgrade from the previous consoles at all. If anything, it's an upgrade to me because I actually pride myself on... I take joy in being able to play games on the go like this. I like being able to just play it on my couch and not to stare at my TV. I can just kind of hold the handheld device and just mac buttons a bit. You know, it just feels good to me. I mean, people like to make fun of me sometimes. They go, Perno, why do you play in handheld mode so much when your TV's right there? And quite frankly, I just prefer handheld mode for a lot of my games. I don't know why. It's just a habit. But being able to do that with my Switch feels good. And I'm sure there's a lot of folks out there with their kids and whatnot, or their wives who need to share their TVs with them, that also enjoy the fact that they can just say, I'm going to play this on the Switch. You can watch whatever stupid Real Housewives you want. I don't care. I got something to do. So for anybody that's all like, oh, you get the downgrade or whatever, yeah, screw that. It's not a downgrade. Yeah, it might be a little bit of graphical, like maybe a graphical downgrade if you're like really pecking and staring at it. But honestly, I'm too busy enjoying the game to start to sit there and try to spot various tweaks and changes. I don't care. The game works. It flows. It plays well. I'm fine with it.
Yeah, and the game was originally a 360 and PS3 game anyway, so it's going to be on par with those at the bare minimum.
Oh, for sure. That is very true. So it's like, It's a fine game, and it's a fun game. And if you somehow are like me and you have not experienced this game yet, do yourself a favor and experience it now because it's worth your damn time. And from what I've heard, they are looking to put the sequel on here too, at least the second game. So somewhere down the line, you'll be able to play the second game as well when you're done this one, also on your Switch. So, hey, what's not to like?
Good stuff.
Delicious, demonic stuff. I mean, yes, good stuff.
Pernell, it is always a pleasure having you on the show. Do you have any final words?
No, I wish I did. I'm actually at a loss for words at the moment. Keep playing those awesome games, hard, easy, whatever. Just enjoy them, and don't sweat the small stuff. Jeez, just enjoy yourself. Don't be a toxic jerk on the internet. You have enough of those.
All right, moving on, we got Chris Taylor joining us. Chris, how's it going?
Hey, going all right. Spring is in the air and in my nasal passages.
Hooray!
Hooray! So if I sound more sultry and, sexier than usual, it's because my throat is congested.
Well, I'm rock hard, so it's working. You ready to dive into things, or did you want to chat about
it? Yeah, we'd better dive into things.
Before your voice gives out?
Yeah.
All right, you got two games to talk about. The first one is called Metagal, developed by Retro Revolution, published by Rattlake Games, released March 29th on the Switch for $4.99. I forgot to get the release dates for PS4 and Xbox, but it is available on all the consoles for $4.99. When those you love have been taken and a maniacal fiend wishes to take over the world, you need a hero of a different caliber. You need a hero like Metagal. Chris, tell us about Metagal.
Oh, I actually thought you were reading the synopsis to Snow Battle Princess Sayuki for a second. Like, oh, I spaced out. But because they have the same plot.
Oh, God.
Or at least the way that's written, that applies to both games. So I thought that was actually kind of funny. Metagal, yes, that's the one we're talking about. If you can't tell from the fact that it's only like three letters away from something else from being called something else. The game is very Mega Man inspired. I think that should be definitely gotten out there as quick as possible. But yeah, so Metagal is the story of a robot girl whose father, which is a kind of not a beardy guy, actually, more of a glasses Z guy. He gets kidnapped by General Creeper, which is the name of the bad guy in the game. Which
nice.
I always like when they're straightforward like that. You know, you don't want a bad guy called, like, Milton or something. Anyways, so General Creeper kidnaps him, and on top of which, he kidnaps all of her sisters. They're all just different gals with a number after their name, and turns them into battle robots. So you must go to each of their stages, and after some action platforming and shooting and stuff, you face off against one of these sisters, and once you defeat her, you get to take her power and go into the next stage. This is all, you know, stop me if this is sounding familiar.
Just a little.
Yeah, just a little. But actually, you know, you have four stages that you can pick from initially. There's some others that are grayed out, so, you know, but you do get your pick of the first four stages, and you get into them, and the action presentation is pretty cool. It's 16-bit graphics. It actually looks like a fancier entry of the Mega Man X series, I would say. But Mega Man, this is not. This is made by a different company, and it is a different game, and that's going to mess with you a little bit if you're an old Mega Man, you know, classicist. That is to say, if you're used to those controls, this game's going to have an adjustment period, because Metagal moves faster than Mega Man, and at a pace that seems to get her right in the way of pretty much everything that is thrown at her. On top of which, she has a dash feature, which is pretty cool. Except that the dash feature is hardwired to the triangle button on the PlayStation 4 controller, whereas the jump button is the cross button underneath. So that basically takes out the ability to dash jump easily. And this being a less expensive 16-bit, 8-bit style game, you know, it's kind of missing that feature that lets you change that. Despite the fact that your powerful weapon is mapped to circle, which is where dash button should be anyway. No. And they didn't even touch most of the shoulder buttons. They didn't map them to anything. But, you know, these are the kind of things that I've come to expect. And really, I found that the dash wasn't all that necessary. So basically, you run and jump. It doesn't have exactly the tightness of a Mega Man game, especially when it comes to having to make that, like, kind of pixel perfect jump over a specific gap that means you have to run all the way to the edge. An enemy never killed me in this game, but I died hundreds of times, and that's because of the jumping. So, you know, just and there's two reasons. That is twofold. One is because the jumping mechanics are a little different and not what I'm used to. Not necessarily bad, just, again, it takes an adjustment period. You kind of have to untrain yourself of the Blue Bomber a little.
Yeah.
But the other thing is that, and it's actually a good thing, is that you have a life bar, like in Mega Man, and then you have a power bar that has, like, basically multiple uses. So this is where your sub-weapons are going to go. You start off with a charged shot, but you don't actually have to charge it. You just push a circle button, and it takes away some energy. That energy refills over time, not with the use of any special items. So if you shoot your powerful shot, it just means you got to wait a few seconds before you can shoot it again. From the very beginning of the game, you're given an option of a second power that actually heals some of your life. So, you know, that basically means that you can sit there and, like, wait a bit and restore your life before continuing on, which is actually kind of a cool feature to me.
Helpful.
Yeah, it's helpful. It lets you, you know, play in a Skyrim style. That's to say, get your ass kicked and then just run away for a little while and wait.
You had to find a way to mention Skyrim, didn't you?
I will always find a way to mention Skyrim if I want to. Anywho's, So there's another actually feature that I quite liked in this game, and this also tags into the game's what I would consider a pretty good, I'd say a medium to high level of difficulty, particularly with the jumps. Or if you're just not patient, then you probably will die from enemies. And of course, there are spikes and
glorious, glorious spikes
and timed platforms over the spikes. That's a major feature in one of the initial four levels. But there is one other thing that I like in this game, and that is that the levels are pretty long. These definitely feel more like Mega Man X levels than the 8-bit ones. You know, it takes you a while to find that gate, and there are precious few checkpoints in the stages. You know, when you die and you hit continue, it takes you back to the last checkpoint, which could require covering a lot of ground. Now, here's where the game gets interesting, is there is a power-up that enemies drop, and you start every stage with two of them. I think two, it might be just one. But it is it's like a golden gear. And if you collect these golden gears, then when you die, you can start at the beginning of that room rather than having to backtrack, but you're limited on how many of those you can do. So it takes the slog out of it a little bit, you know. But you kind of have to make a choice, you know. If you're only three rooms in and you've only got like two of these things, obviously you're just going to want to start from the beginning. And you can keep collecting them until you're out of the level. So that's handy. It means you can just kind of train yourself on the level from the beginning, and then maybe, you know, get enough of those to power through the rest of it. And considering that this is the kind of game where you're going to jump, you know, take a blind leap onto something and get hit by a bullet you didn't see, and then get knocked onto the spike or pit and then get killed instantly because iframes don't actually apply to floor hazards, you're going to be using those. And it's definitely like kind of making a decision between the two. So I liked where they went with the sort of, I guess you could say, a kind of compromise on the game's difficulty, because they definitely went for difficult. This is a pretty difficult platformer in this style. I dare say it's probably, well, I don't know if it's harder than the more recent Mega Mans, but it's up there with them. And given that the music is really cool, it's got a nice jazzy feel on top of having some rocking songs in it too, and that the graphics look really good. I actually really quite like the look of this game, and it's got a little bit of humor mixed into there. The protagonist and the scientist before he's kidnapped, he outfits her for her battle gear, and it's like this skimpy, you know, metal bikini type thing, and she's like, "What the hell?" She's like, A, why did you even give me skin? And B, why isn't it covered up? Kind of stuff like that. So they have like a real conversation about that. And you're kind of like, yeah, that's cool they're having that conversation, but also those are good questions. But anyway, yeah, so I quite appreciate this game's quirk, and I hope to get good enough at it to actually beat it.
I know you are good enough to do one other thing with the game, and that is complete the trophy list.
Yeah.
this is going to be a popular one among trophy hunters and achievement hunters, because you could complete this game, get all 1,000 achievements, get all the trophies in about 20 minutes.
Yes, if you can beat one of the levels, and that is an if, but if you can beat even one level, you can 100% the trophies in this game. It is very true. Yeah, they give you trophies for starting the game, for not skipping the storyline. They give you one for dying on spikes.
One for falling off the platform. Yeah. One for continuing with the cog. One for picking up the cogs. It is an incredibly easy trophy and achievement list. And I think that's going to get a bunch of sales just on that alone, because I know how many friends of mine are big into those.
At that price, you might as well.
Yeah. So I'll ask you, $5. What do you think of Metagal?
Yeah, $5, it's hard not to recommend a game. I think this is one of the higher quality under $10 games I've played in recent months. So I would say yes, go for it.
Awesome. And then you got one other game to talk about, which you thought I was talking about earlier, but that is Snow Battle Princess Sayuki, developed by Starfish SD Incorporated, published by Ninja Games Japan, released March 28th on the Switch for $15 even. Help Sayuki, a snow princess, break an evil curse set upon her loved one by finding 8 items scattered across 8 lands. The treacherous journey will take you across Blizzard Mountains, Monster's Castle, and Hell's Valley, where you may encounter many mysterious yokai monsters. Embark on a dangerous quest to break an evil curse, trapping your loved one. Chris, tell us about it.
Okay, so Battle Princess Sayuki. Did I get that right? It's not Super Battle Princess Sayuki. No, there's a snow in there.
Yeah, Snow Battle Princess
Sayuki. Snow Battle Princess Sayuki. God dang it, I'm so bad at these. That's why I usually have the splash page like pulled up so that I can like cheat and read the title when I need to.
I'm cheating too. I just have my notes pulled up on my screen.
It's a good title, folks, just bad at memory and not feeling it. Not 100% today, so bear with me. Okay, so Snow Battle Princess Sayuki is a game where I guess you play a goddess of some kind. They say that there's goddesses for like all the different elements, etc., but they don't get along with humans. They're just too cool and too beautiful and too attractive and charming. Obviously, humans want nothing to do with that. So they kind of, you know, shut themselves off in the mountains and etc. So one such princess, or not, I guess princess, but goddess, whatever. They say goddess in the game, but I guess she's also a princess, whatever. This lady of the snow decides that she wants to go down and help a village, and in doing so, she develops a crush on a human boy who, interestingly enough, you don't actually get to see at the beginning of the game. Maybe it's some reveal at the end, and it's some, you know, like middle-aged dude called Chuck. Who knows? But anyways,
is now canon for me. That is the official ending.
Well, until we see the real ending, we won't know. And I'll get to that in a minute. But so yeah, he gets cursed into falling asleep forever, but because he's a boy, to break the curse, it does not require true love's kiss. It requires 8 MacGuffins spread across 8 boss-filled climbs. And the first one, believe it or not, is a snow level.
What?
Yeah. So the gameplay is a top-down arcade style kind of walking around and shooting thing. Think Kiki Kakai or, you know, Pocky and Rocky. Even like the old Legend of the Mystical Ninja, like it might remind you of that, except you do have, you know, 8-way directions. You have a little snow bunny friend who follows you around, kind of like a Gradius option ship. And he throws snowballs, which will occasionally freeze an enemy, or stuff them into a coffin, which was odd to me. But it irritated me, too, because if you touch the coffin, you take damage still. And I'm like, what the hell? but, you know, that's the thing, is that when you start this game, your big concern is going to be not taking so many hits, because you have 3 hits before you die, and you have 3 lives before you have to start the entire level over. Because it is, like I said, arcade style. In fact, it was hard for me to believe, you know, I can't find too much information on this game because I feel like it's pretty new and on all the platforms, right? Like it's not been on Steam for like 6 years or anything, right?
As far as I know, it's just on the Switch.
Okay. So yeah, like you could easily, if you would have asked me, is this a port of an old arcade game? Like I would have 80% said, yeah, definitely. Because not only is it so arcade style, like in the gameplay and in the look and everything like that, it even has a 4-3, playing field set inside of like a border to fill up the widescreen TV, which, you know, that's what the arcade games do. So it doesn't quite fill up the widescreen thing there. So that was an interesting choice, but I mean, I guess it plays into things because, you know, you kind of have to dodge bullets that come out of nowhere. So I suppose that's part of the challenge. But yeah, so you
looking it up, it did come out on Steam and it's apparently on PS4 in Japan.
Oh, okay, cool. Well, that's still things. It's not like some ancient game or anything. So that could have fooled me. That's what I'm saying. And so you run around and you shoot like your ice shards at enemies and, you know, pop them. And then you also can get power up. So you get a three-way shot, a homing shot, and a bomb, which is really cool. They randomly drop from enemies, or they exist in like preset treasure chest items that you have to like open up. Oh, another one this reminds me of is Valkyrie Densetsu. That's for all my Namco fans out there. Anyways. You're
dropping knowledge.
Dropping names.
Obscure like titles.
Oh, not that obscure. Yes, it is obscure. But, anyways, so, you know, you got your little option ship, you got your shots, and then here's where things get pretty cool. Cool, like a nice base pun. You get a special sort of not a screen clearing power, but if you push the Y button or the right control stick in any direction, Princess Sayuki will summon a snowstorm, which will take up about a third of the screen and will flow in the direction that you push the stick or the direction that you're facing when you push Y. Much easier to push the stick, by the way. And that snowstorm will freeze any enemies that aren't currently invulnerable, and the game makes you use it quite a lot. In fact, there are sections, usually at checkpoints, where the game will put 100 enemies on the screen at once, coming at you extremely fast, usually in like a circle pattern or something like that. You know, think like Galaga or something. And if you use that snow power, then you can freeze them all at once, and then if you shoot one, it will actually bust all of them and will give you a combo, which will give you more fuel for using more of those spells. And the game clearly wants you to use those spells, because it only takes 5 points of your snow power, I'm going to call it. I don't know what it actually is, but you collect snowballs to make it go up, so I'm going to say snow power. It takes 5 points of snow power, and enemies commonly drop between like 1 to 10. So this is clearly a mechanic that the game likes you to rely on, and in fact, it's kind of essential for beating bosses, which are huge. I really quite enjoy the bosses. You get to fight a massive skeleton in the first level, and it's actually really fun. I guess the second boss isn't so huge, but still terrifying. Yeah, so the game sends all the enemies are basically yokai, and the presentation is what I like to call too cute to kill. Think Secret of Mana or Legend of Zelda.
Oh, God.
Like, all the enemies are, like, lovable snowmen and stuff, but you have to murder them all. even have to fight, like, haunted lamps and things like that. Yeah, that's yokai stuff for you. But anyways, so, yeah, the game sends, like, waves upon waves of enemies after you, and it really, you know, it racks up the challenge, but it doesn't really overwhelm at any point, and especially since you can rely on a partial screen clearing shot, like, almost constantly, which, on top of, you know, freezing the enemies, makes you partially invulnerable for a little while. Plus you get one move where you get to do an invincibility roll to get out of situations, and you turn into a snowball when you do that, so it's kind of cool.
Nice.
But yeah, like, the action feels really smooth on this one. It's really nice. Had no trouble at all, like, aiming my stuff. And like I said, the game eventually, like, gives you collectibles that you can rack up to get more hits and more, you know, extra lives. And the more hit points thing is permanent, so you want to seek out those power-ups and find them. And, you know, so it's a cool game that actually really gives you progress, and the levels are nice and varied. Bosses are big and bad and tough, and and the music's really good too. The only real complaint that I have is that it appears that you don't have a continue option in this game. I might be mistaken on this. You know, I couldn't find it, and I couldn't find anybody else that talked about it, but when I left the game and started it again, it didn't have a continue option or new game option. It just said one player game, and when I chose it, it just started me over at the beginning.
Mm.
So I think this is the kind of game where, true to its arcade roots, you actually have to beat it all in one go. Fortunately, though, there is a two-player mode, so if you can get a friend to do that with you, then, you know, you'll have all the more ease in getting there.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, overall, $15. What do you say?
$15 for fans of, like I said, you know, Kiki Kakai slash, you know, Pocky and Rocky, Valkyrie, top-down shooters of any ilk. I think this is well worth playing. I think for folks who are intimidated by games that are too difficult, this is a good one to pick up because I feel like the challenge is good and balanced. You know, apart from that, I think that it's maybe suffers a little from that lack of a continue option, unless I'm wrong and there is a continue option. But, you know, it's got a lot of cool extras like boss mode. You can just fight the bosses if you like, or like, you know, I saw some other ones in there. So, you know, I think that you're getting a lot of game for this, and it's clearly well made, so I think it's worth $15 for sure.
Awesome. Sounds good. And I like how much difficulty has come up on this episode. You are the third person out of three to mention difficulty.
What can I say? Indie games are, you know, they're seeing the souls, and they're like, I can do that too.
Which is fitting, considering the first game that we talked about on the episode was Sekiro, so...
Oh, of course, yeah. Yeah, the game what everyone is playing on Twitch right now.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, well.
Oh, good stuff, Chris, as always. Do you have any final thoughts before we move on?
Everybody stock up on Benadryl. Spring is coming.
All right, next game to talk about is called 7 Enhanced Edition, developed by Fool's Theory, published by IMGN.pro, released March 26th on PS4 and PC for $29.99. 7 Enhanced Edition is an open-world isometric stealth and action role-playing game in which you play as Tyriel, a master thief sent on a mission that will shake the foundations of the Vetral Empire. Free roam across the vibrant island, prison island of Peh, and explore the sea depths on aboard a submarine in the Drowned Past expansion. Checking this one out is Dark Mika. She wrote in her review, and here is what she has to say. 7 Enhanced Edition is an isometric stealth hack-and-slash action RPG. It's set in a post-apocalyptic world after a war between humans and AIs called Demons. You play as Tyriel, a master thief who gets caught and sent to a prison island called Peh. This is actually an update for 7, Days Long Gone, which was my 31st review for SML. You could find that in full on episode 354 in the YouTube playlist. Yeah, that's right, motherfuckers, I keep track. Thanks, Dark Mika. Enhanced Edition made some tweaks to the game and added a piece of DLC called Drowned Past. It's a free upgrade for anyone who buys the game, and there's no price hike on either the PC or PS4. So if you buy the game or own the game, it's a free bonus because they decide they want to thank the fans for supporting them, because they're classy bastards. In this DLC, which can start fairly early in your game, or if you finished it, you can play from near the end, but not at the end though, because the main campaign has a point of no return. Sadly, the DLC also has a point of no return, which is really the only negative about it, honestly. You're pulled in by a character that Tyriel apparently knows from the past, and you go on to a new location, a cruise submarine, because fuck open air, I guess. Honestly, I don't know. Fuck it. It's fairly short. The dev said it should take about 7 hours. I searched high and low, opened everything, did a lot of unnecessary fighting, and it still took barely that long. I think it's more of a 4 or so hour DLC. It's entertaining. I would have been fine spending a fiver on this even, but it's fucking free, so it's even more kick-ass. I can't tell you much because the DLC has some twists in that would ruin the story if I did. That being said, it's more the same for the game. What you can expect from the main game you'll get here, it's worked into the standard plot of the game as a large, note fucking huge, side quest. Unlike the rest of the main game though, you don't really need to be stealthy in this most of the time. More than half of it is in the submarine where it's 1-on-1 or 3-on-1 fights, which are both fairly doable since the enemies don't have weapons. That being said, though, most everything you fight in the DLC infinitely spawns, so don't fucking fight too much. It's a waste of time, and you'll never see the end of it. Trust me, I tried. Came with some updates, some I really liked, some I probably never noticed, but the ones I like are now schematic skills, abilities, rune puzzles, valuable stashes you find. All of it is marked on the map when you find them and disappear when you claim them. This makes finding shit in the game so much easier. I went right past like 5 or 6 goddamn upgrades, like constantly, because I knew I'd been to these places numerous times and obviously missed the fucking upgrades every goddamn time until this map improvement came. Oh my god, it's so fucking great. Like, you honestly have no idea how much I love this map update. Honestly, as pathetic as this might sound, I like this map upgrade more than even the DLC because it's just so goddamn useful and something I wanted since I first played the game. The reason is even right now, there's not a wiki or anything real helpful finding upgrades or schematics or really anything in the game. With this update, someone might finally be able to make a list of where to find, and goddamn it, I might become that person, because I fucking want 100% everything I could do in this game, and now I can hopefully find it all. And even Mark's side quests, supposedly, like I already did. I already did them all, so I didn't really see that on the map marker, but still, that makes life so much easier. Also, they increase the size of the icons on the map, which helps my blind ass. Both of these are just quality of life upgrades that you don't really understand how much you want and need until it suddenly exists. Told you I like the map upgrade. I don't even feel bad. Suck it up, Joe. I could have written more. Deal with it. I originally thought that the $30 game was worth buying with an extra 4+ hour campaign and the map upgrade. Guess what? Yeah, buy the fucking game. That's not a request, just in case you thought it was. The only drawback I have for the game in total is it's a resource hog. Takes up 5.7 to 6 gig of my PC's 8 gig of RAM with everything set to low or off. It is fucking crazy. Thank you, Dark Mika, for sending that in. And last person to talk with tonight is Jacob Garner. Jacob, how are you doing?
Hey, you said I'm a friend. You have to edit that out, probably.
I don't know. Honestly, I did the intro on the last review I recorded, and I'm just going to edit in you saying, ha, you called me a friend, so it's not going to make any sense.
Damn it.
How's it going?
It's going. I mean, the last couple of days have been vaguely trying. So today, like, my oldest kid, who's in preschool, he got sent home with forms today for registration for kindergarten in the fall, and I'm just like, I'm not okay.
They grow up like, so fast, don't they?
Right. And I'm just like, and I know that this is like not like this is boring, not video game stuff, but it's just like, damn it. Like, he was just so, I mean, like he's still really fucking tiny, but I mean, like he comes up to my waist, but you know, I mean, like I remember when he was even tinier and talked less and pooped himself regularly.
Just like daddy.
Excuse me. They now have that under control. Thank you very much. I wear very fashionable temporary diapers. Thank you very much.
Nice.
No, but I mean, it's just like, oh man, like shit. Fuck. Like, yeah, I don't even know like how to like put it into words. Like I really don't. It's just like, it's like a starting of like a weird new era and like an end of one, but like my youngest is still like really wee, so you know, there's still that, but I mean it's just like damn. And then in terms of gaming, so like a while back I bought Borderlands the Handsome Collection because I found it at like an antique store, oddly enough, and I was just like, oh shit, like I could just like transport my save file from my Xbox 360 Borderlands 2 game, and I'll just play it on my Xbox One. Well, I just found out, my buddy John was like, hey, you want to play some Borderlands? And I'm like, okay. So I pop in the disc and start installing, and I fire up Borderlands 2, and it can't find my cloud file. And I'm like,
oh, what? No.
Like, what the fuck do you mean you can't find my cloud file? Like, granted, that thing's like 6 years old, but shit, that, like, it better fucking still be there. So I go online to start reading the fine print, and apparently there was an update to Borderlands 2 where you had to upload your cloud save file to that, and then you could hop on your Xbox One and then just download your cloud save that way. And I'm just like, shit, my Xbox 360 is somewhere in a box. God only knows where my copy of Borderlands 2 is. Oh, and I'm just like, like, I had Brick leveled up to like a fuckload and had like crazy, possibly illegal weapons. And damn it.
Yeah, you're going to have to drag out your 360 and upload the save.
I know. And I'm just like, shit, like, I don't know when the fuck I'm going to have time for that. So I was just like, shit, we're going to have to start playing the pre-sequel because I never played that yet. But I was pretty bummed when I found that out. Okay.
You're such a whiner.
I know.
Anyway, you're ready to talk about what you are here to talk about.
I am ready to talk about what I'm here to talk about.
I would normally say you're ready to talk about the game that you're here to talk about, but this isn't a game that you're here to talk about.
It's not really a game. I mean, you could construe it as one, but nah, it's really... it's really like a tutorial. I wouldn't call it a tutorial, but
it's a training program.
Yeah, a training program. Right. Are you going to explain it or what?
Yeah, I might as well go into it. The final title to talk about tonight is called Driving Essentials, developed and published by Virtual Driver Interactive, released March 27th on Xbox One for $59.99. Driving Essentials, the premier driver training program, is now available on Xbox. This is not a game, but a real driver training program, which until now was only offered on larger simulation systems. Driving Essentials offers a complete training program for novice and newly licensed drivers. Jacob, tell us about it.
Well, because we here at the SML Podcast like to be true to form and give you that realistic experience, I have since hit B to buckle my seatbelt because I am doing this from a car. That's right. Oh. That's right, fuckers. I am sitting in a car doing this review.
Oh my lord.
And I am driving. I am doing distracted driving, which lesson 9 told us not to do. Actually, I'm lying. I'm parked at a Sheetz parking lot.
Okay, good. I was gonna say, if you were really driving while doing this, you failed.
I know. I would have failed immediately. Actually, no, it would have let me play a little Frogger game, but I digress. Seriously, I am sitting in a car. It's interesting. All right. So back when I was in high school, my parents bought me these like SAT programs, like that were supposed to help, you know, boost my score by like 100 points. And they never actually did. But even though they were guaranteed to do it, they were actually hosted by like the MTV VJs from like 1995, which was kind of weird because, well, the best thing is that it was like 2002, 2001 when I was doing this. So it's like all these people dressed in like vaguely grunge clothing, you know, acting cool, you know, trying to explain like calculus to me. This kind of feels like up that alley, not in like the uncoolness factor, but in like this is not a game, but it's something that your parents are going to buy for their teenagers to help them do better at, you know, at driving, as opposed to, you know, actually getting into college and stuff like that. So pretty much there are 10, there's 9 lessons total with a final review. And each one goes through like various things. Like one of them is distracted driving. One of them is, you know, when you get to an intersection, who goes first? You know, different weather conditions, how should you handle them? Stuff like that. And it's not perfect, but it covers the bases. I mean, because it obviously can't get too in-depth, because you, like, if you do that, you start running into, well, in Pennsylvania, you have to do this, but in Mississippi, that's a completely different law.
Yeah.
Like, you know, so on and so forth. So it's a good general overview. And the tips are general, like, you know, it's pretty well put together. I'll be honest, like, I mean, because like it's hard not to stray into like the, oh, well, I have to talk about it like it's a game territory. Like, it's real hard not to.
I can understand that because it's on the Xbox One, which is a game console. So this is kind of new ground for us.
Right. And it's like, and it's a lot of drive here, do this. Like, it's almost like it has its own quests, if you want to think about it that way.
So it's an RPG.
it is an RPG, and like you will lose hit points if you do things wrong. And so it goes through everything. Like, the guy who is your instructor, you know, he goes through everything pretty well, has a decently calm voice throughout. And like, you just pretty much have to drive. Now, there are issues with it. Like, there is a grading system, and it will dock you like anywhere from like -1 to -5 points at a time. Other, like, unless you crash, which in case it just ends the lesson immediately. And it seems fairly inconsistent in some areas with it. Like, when you're stopped at a stop sign, There are times where, like, after I stopped, use my turn signal, waited a couple seconds if I needed to, and then turn, it would claim that either I've ran through a stop sign or I didn't use my turn signal, which neither one of them were true. And so it's not perfect on its judging. The biggest concern that I had is that there was one level, and I don't remember, I'm calling it level, even though I shouldn't. and I don't remember if it was one of the lessons or if it was a free drive area, because it does let you just, like when you do free drive, you can, like, go day or night, and then you can choose all sorts of different weather conditions, like snow, thunderstorm, rain, fog.
And clear.
And I think it's clear. I feel like there's one other one, but I don't know.
No, I think that's all of them.
Okay. But yeah, so there was one time I definitely turned onto the off ramp of a highway and then started driving in the wrong lane of the highway. And the game did not, like, ding me. It didn't end it immediately. It didn't do anything, which I was just like, guys, this, this is the kind of thing that gets people killed.
I ran into a similar issue where I was behind a huge line of cars and I was just doing the free drive and, you know, just trying to get some practice going on. And, I was behind a bunch of cars that were just stopped at a stop sign and they weren't going. I don't know why. Mm-hmm. I don't know if the AI just glitched out briefly. But I wanted to continue playing. So I just drove around down the middle of the road, passing all these cars, threading the needle, driving, straddling the yellow lines, and it didn't ding me at all.
Yeah, that's actually another thing. Like, if you're waiting in a long line, I'm not sure what's up with it, but, like, all of a sudden cars can disappear from the line, and it's really bizarre. Like, I've had cars that are right in front of me, and then all of a sudden they're gone, but I'll see a car like two spots ahead.
Mm-hmm.
So the line hasn't actually moved, but the car's disappeared, and then, like, I could actually move through that area where that car was. And it's not like they turned, like, you know, we're like, oh, fuck this, I'm not waiting around for this lesson, you know. It's not like they, like, actually turned. It's just they just straight up disappeared. And the most infuriating time that this happened was the distracted driving level, which, by the way, is an absolute pain in the head. Like, it's just a pain. I hated it because, I get the point that it's trying to prove that, you know, obviously distracted driving is bad, and no matter how good you think you are, you're still going to mess up. And so, like, getting to the end of that lesson ends up being this, like, crazy, like, race, like, not a race, because you're trying, like, the basic lesson of this game, like, of this simulator, is you should always go 5 to 10 under the speed limit. But on this specific lesson, so I'm stopped at a stoplight, and, like, previously they had talked about, oh, well, you know, things might, like, unexpectedly happen. The bus in front of me completely disappears, and here comes this oncoming cyclist on a bicycle. They just straight up crash into me, even though my car is parked. I haven't moved. I haven't done anything. And it's just like, oh, you were distracted. You're like, look what you did, blah, 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 blah. And I'm just like, the game glitched out and screwed me over on this. Like, what are you talking about? Honestly, the distracted one was most infuriating because it also makes you do this, like, Frogger. Like, it lets you, like, play this Frogger-ish game. And as you're doing it, you use the right joystick to control the frog. But then by using the right joystick, you can't turn your head. And so the game automatically dings you for not turning your head to look both ways at, like, a stoplight and stuff like that. And it's just like, I get the point you're trying to make, guys, but, like, when I'm trying to do what I'm supposed to be doing, like, you're still dinging me on it, even though, I don't know. Like, there were some parts where as I said before, like, I feel like it unfairly grades you. Like, it's not correctly, calibration, like, isn't the right word, but it's just, like, you know, it comes up this, like, with weird, you know, oh, we're going to ding you for this, but we won't ding you on that.
Yeah.
And God help you if you're like going five over the speed limit, because then like you'll just get this rapid succession of minus ones, and that can really screw you over on a lesson as you're going through it. So yeah. So otherwise, like in terms of like graphics and stuff like that, it's like early PS2 at best. I mean, it's not meant to be flashy. I was actually surprised with how in depth the game world is, in terms of like how well built together the city is. Like there's actually like a city hall, there are factories, there are apartment buildings, there's gas stations, there's billboards, there's trees. If you go out into the rural area, there's farms, there's fences with actual like sections broken. There's cows all over the place. Like there's a surprisingly different amount of sounds as you're going through like the whole entire area. And it has a varied number of like terrain for you to go through, including like a dirt road. So I was pretty impressed with that aspect of it, but yeah, it's just like, it, this is a weird thing for us to review because obviously it's not a game.
Yeah.
So I can't be like, oh, hey, everybody go off and like, you know, go play driving. What's it called? I want to call it driving techniques, but I know that's not driving essentials.
Yes. Essentials.
Right? Yeah.
Proud of you.
Thank you. You know, hey, everybody go off and buy driving essentials. Like you absolutely need it. Honestly, if I had a teenager right now, I'd buy it for him. Like I view it the same way as those SAT things where, you know, your parents just like, listen, I want you to pass your test. You know, maybe I can't help you with everything. Maybe this game can, you know, help, you know, make you understand some of the concepts while you're, you know, having some fun while you mess around on the levels and stuff like that.
Earning achievements.
You know, right. Which, if you're an achievement, you know, hunter, this about 4 or 5 hours of gameplay will net you 1,000 out of 1,000. Maybe 5 or 6 tops, depending on how finicky the grading system wants to be.
Yeah.
So yeah.
I will say a hidden benefit of the game, this affected me personally. When I play driving games, I'm usually like the trigger's all the way down or I'm not driving at all. Like I'm terrible at throttle control. In this game, it doesn't let you do that because if you have the trigger all the way down, you're going to be breaking the speed limit.
And right.
You're going to get dinged for it. So this game is actively teaching me to manage my throttle control and hold the trigger halfway down instead of all the way down and kind of fine tuning and finessing the trigger instead of just holding all the way down all the time. So that's kind of a little hidden benefit that, you know, someone like me, I just turned 38. That's helping me. It's not necessarily with driving, but it is, that's a benefit for me.
Yeah, and I'll be honest, I've now like started waiting 3 seconds at stoplights.
See, it like, teaches it, it's you
kind
shit.
Of biz- like, yeah, I mean, well, I mean, I think I kind of already knew that, but at the same time, I just like, it's a weird refresher. Like, and I've had to repeat a couple of the lessons because, like, of the again, because of the weird grading system, that it's now just like, oh, all right. Well, I'm at a, like, I was at an intersection earlier today and I was just like, crap. All right. Wait 3 seconds and go. And of course, like the game tells you like, oh, well, you know, you better count it out. And like, you're just like, oh my God, this is going to take forever. Cause some of those lights in the game do take forever. One of them was like 5 minutes long. I actually timed it.
Wow.
It was ridiculous and nothing was coming. And of course, like, so I'm like, all right, fuck it. Nothing's coming. And there's no sign in the game that says that you can't turn on red. So I turn and it's like, oh, you ran a red light. And I'm like, fuck you, game.
Right. Right on red is legal in my state.
So yeah, again, like, honestly, like if you've got a teenager that you're just starting to teach how to like drive and stuff like that, this is a pretty good thing for you to pick up. I actually don't know what the cost of this is.
$60.
Oh,
yeah, well, it is pricey.
That is pricey, but then again, they know their market.
Yeah.
Like, this is going to be parents who are like, oh, I want my kid to pass the test, so here's $60. Yikes, but at the same time, I'm pretty sure that's what my parents paid for the SAT kind of stuff. So,
and again, this is an educational program that until now was only offered in like schools and businesses and stuff like that. So to have an at-home version is kind of new ground for them.
Yeah, and honestly, like, I'd like to see more titles like this. I mean, I think it's pretty neat that, you know, we have like a I don't want to call it a simulator, but like a teaching tool. Like, you don't really see educational software on consoles anymore. It's almost all strictly PC. And I like, you know, I'd like to see stuff like that again. And I mean, yeah, it would be cool to have like Number Munchers on the Xbox One, but you know,
dude, I would lose my shit if we got Number Munchers on Xbox One.
I wish we would, or like I would lose San Diego. But you know, stuff like this too obviously has a place, and I think it would be really neat to have more stuff like this. So I hope it does well, and I hope other companies see that. So
awesome, sounds good, Jacob. Always a pleasure having you on. Thanks to everyone else who came on and did their thing. I know it's been a long episode, so thanks to you for sticking around and listening to the whole thing. Music, we're going to play that Tiberian Sun's Shantae track that lasts 13 minutes because it's fucking awesome and I want to hear it again. What do you think of that?
I think that's cool.
Goddamn right it's cool. Jacob, do you have any final words to end the show?
You know, the funny thing is that I was just like, oh man, Joe's going to skip over me. Well, it's not like I had anything to say. And then you did ask me what I had to say, and I'm just like, oh man.
My cat's eating a box.
That's far more intelligent than anything I'd have to say, that's for sure.